On FM, on DAB, and up to date on social media. We are Radio Newark.
Hey, 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 Kevin Guthrie here, talking all things mental health and well-being. Thank you so much for listening to another one of our podcasts. So remember that we do these podcasts to help, I guess, create a new bridge between what mental health used to be and what we would like it to be. And for me personally, it's about people accessing and people finding a little bit more peace in their world. So we have a guest in the studio today, as we always do. Today we have the Reverend David Pickersgill. Welcome, David.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I nearly struggled with your name there, but I think I've got it right. So we have a question. The question today is, and David, you're going to have to answer this one because I can't answer it at all. What does a vicar actually do? Tell us.
Well, I would love to tell you. It's being a vicar is a great job. It's a huge blessing. And people see the vicar in front of a church, obviously leading on a Sunday morning or at weddings or at funerals. And that's a part of the job that I love. It's really great to be with people celebrating. Church is a celebration. Even at a funeral, you're celebrating someone's life. And then during the week, I do the first thing I do every day is I pray at 9 o'clock every morning. We pray in church. I do things like did a bit of chaplaincy this morning at Beaumont House. I visit people, I talk with people. There's a fair amount of practical stuff that needs to happen. St. Mary's Church, one of my churches, is the big tall one in the middle of town, and that's a very old, ancient building, and sometimes bits fall off it or you need to repair bits, and I thankfully don't do that, but there's a team of people, but we need to talk and arrange and that kind of thing, and a certain amount of running stuff. But vicars have this thing, it's called the cure of souls, and it's a really ancient phrase, the cure of souls, and it's basically, it's cure with the root of the word care, so caring for souls, and the Church of England, it doesn't matter whether you go to church or not, that that everyone has got a church that's kind of their church, that they're welcoming. And so in kind of Newark, my area is kind of the centre of Newark and the northern part over the bridge. So I've got the cure of souls for that area, and it's about being able to, well, in days before there was terminology of mental health and that kind of thing, it was about helping people to live in the best possible way, would have covered a whole lot of things. Now, I'm not a professional, and I'm not an expert, particularly in the field of mental health, but it's that same kind of spirit and desire, actually, to help people in becoming who they really are, the true selves within themselves. So anything that I can do to help with that is my job and my role and my remit.
When you use the term true selves, would that equate to authentic self?
Yeah, I like the term authentic. It's kind of the idea that so we talk a little bit about sin in church. If you've been around church, you may have heard the word sin, but the truth about sin is that sin isn't a thing. Sin is just something good that's been distorted. Sin doesn't have a light. It's like darkness isn't a thing. It's just the absence of light.
Yeah.
And so each one of us, there's a sense in which I would say God knows who we should be and who we were created to be. And life is a journey about more and more becoming who we can be and who God's created us to be. I'd say with God's help. And so there's no difference between becoming more good and becoming more real
in
Christian theology. To become a better person is to become a more real person.
Yeah.
And to become close to God, who is ultimately both completely good and completely real, is just pure reality.
Yeah.
I think to describe it as an authentic self, I think that's a helpful way of thinking about it.
It sometimes feels like in therapy, when I'm working with people, that is, without even saying it, it sometimes feels like that's the ultimate goal, is to spend some time stripping away the labels that have been stuck on, and And also looking at the social constructs that we live by, yeah. and looking at some of those and not necessarily dismissing them or disrespecting them, but at least trying to move them away so as we can then flourish. Yeah. I delivered a little bit of a speech last week, and at the end of it, I put the social constructs by which we live are strangling us and not allowing us. They don't allow us to breathe and to develop and grow. Mm. They just don't. So I guess we're kind of tapping into those areas there. And that for me, that's what therapy is about a lot of the time. It's about stripping those away because they become unhealthy, and they stop us from breathing.
Yeah.
So we start strangling on them.
Do you know that thing about Michelangelo's David, the statue in Florence? It's amazing. It's really beautiful. We went there for our anniversary, and my wife, when she saw it, she just cried. It's like this huge, it's about five times life-size, just a statue of a man standing, but it's an absolutely beautiful work of art. And apparently someone asked Michelangelo, well, look, how did you do it? How did you create this just absolutely stunning piece of artwork? And he said, I just chipped away all the bits that weren't David.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's what we do in therapy and in life as well.
Yeah.
So when I put a shout out for people to come and record these podcasts, you step forward.
Yeah.
Why did you step forward? Why did you want to be here?
Well, there's a couple of different reasons. One is that we see as a church the effects, the importance of good mental health and good mental health care. At the extreme end, we know what a problem suicide is in our society. Mm-hmm. That's a tragic thing. And we've been called on sometimes to take funerals of people who've died by suicide. And it's just such a tragic thing. So one of the reasons is to put that message out and to really encourage people, and particularly men, particularly guys, to take care of their mental health, to look for help. I've got a couple of friends who I know have journeyed with depression and have been really courageous about it. And it's a huge thing. But anyone who's on that journey, to encourage them and say, look, it's really worth it. All the help that you get, all of the work that you put into maintaining good mental health is so important for you and for your family. So that's one of the things. And also to talk about some of the things that I found helpful in my own journey with mental health, and just kind of to share and to start a discussion around that, give opportunity for people to think about some of those things.
Yeah, and hopefully through the discussions that we're having and that I have with other people, that people will connect to it more and more.
Yeah.
And as people connect, it's not about normalizing, but there is a slight process in there of making it just more talkable, because we haven't talked about it in the past. There's been an awful lot of stigma attached to it. Yeah. I still get people stepping through the therapy door and going, yeah, I'm really ashamed to be here and I don't want to be here. And I'm like, what would you do if you had a bad leg? Why don't I go to the doctors?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Yeah.
Is something happening in your head or in your leg?
Yeah.
And I do think we live in a world where we're very quick to medicalize and say, oh, well, that's because of this. I was talking to somebody this morning about this, and I said, I'm not convinced that that is. I can see the physical symptom, but I'm not convinced it is. I'm more in line with that's the stress and anxiety that has them produced.
Yeah.
These are the symptoms, is what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But
well, in the church, for centuries, it's been normal to talk about your internal world. And I don't really know the journey of how that kind of got lost in our society, but my wife is a spiritual director, and I go to spiritual direction. And for spiritual direction, if you saw people having spiritual direction, it would look like a counselling session, two people talking to each other. It was invented in the, or developed in the 1600s. Particularly, there's a guy called St. Ignatius who kind of came up with it. It's so helpful. So I sit in a room. Basically, I sit in a room once every 6 weeks with a guy called Johnny, and we sit in his one of his rooms in his house, and I'll talk about something that's going on for me, and he'll just ask me brilliant questions, really, really good questions. And the idea is to help me see where God is.
Yeah.
And it's very explicitly about God being there. But I just find it the most amazing, most helpful thing. And I've had counselling as well on a couple of different occasions. That's been really helpful as well. And so it's just, we should be in a society where paying attention to what's going on inside your heart, your own inner world, is just a totally normal thing to do. That's where I'd want to get. That's where it should be.
Have you heard of HeartMath?
I think I've heard the name, but I don't know much about it.
So, and everybody that listens to these podcasts regularly will be getting a little tired of me talking about HeartMath. As you can see, it's my new best friend. So HeartMath is the... We know that the heart has way more power than the brain. Uh-huh. We can feel the magnetic field from the heart about a meter and a half away from the body. Wow. We know that. We know that the heart sends way more signals to the brain, or messages to the brain, than the brain does to the heart. They communicate directly. So the basis of HeartMath is, if we begin to feel things, and if we do things that makes the heart sing, for want of a better phrase, the heart becomes more, it becomes healthier, it starts to rhythm more, the rhythm settles down, sends signals to the brain that everything's okay. Similarly, if the opposite happens, so we have the option of living in our head or living in our heart.
Yeah.
And actually what we're trying to do is live in our heart, because if we live in our head, the head's only about survival.
Yeah.
It's just there to keep us alive. It's there to scan the horizon and make sure there's no tigers there that are going to take us down, or anybody else for that matter. But actually, we're not, as we're doing that, and as we've developed this over years and years and years, we've started living less in our hearts. So therefore, it leads to this very, very unhealthy society that we live in right now. So that's the basis of HeartMath. If we can do stuff that makes the heart beat in rhythm, the head will then settle down, because it gets messages that everything's okay. But it's about feeling things there.
And I think we live in a society as well. There's a really good book called The Master and His Emissary. I don't know if you've read it.
No.
It's by a guy called Ian McGilchrist. And you can watch, actually, if you don't want, I've not read the whole book, but if you can watch like a little online video of it. It's a couple of minutes long. It's one of these RSA shorts. The Master and His Emissary, or Emissary, I don't know how you say that word. But basically, his whole thing is, we're living in, he talks about it in terms of left brain and right brain.
Yeah.
And we live in a very left brain society, which is all, the left brain is language, and dividing things up into small chunks, and managing things, and being in control of things.
Yeah.
The book's called The Master and His Emissary, to say, actually, it's the right brain that's the master, that should be in charge. And the right brain sees the whole. And the right brain is the ways that we connect with the world, and that aren't just about language and chopping things up. And, you know, through art and through music and through architecture, or through poems and stories and that kind of thing. And actually, that's the more important part of the brain. And we lose part of ourselves if we just operate from this language side, where it's just everything could be chopped up and divided and managed. Actually, we lose part of who we are.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things about in church. What we do is we have these experiences together that we bring in. You know, there's really incredible music, and some of the music we sing is in Latin. So you don't even, there's no even option for knowing what the words mean. And we have these, the center of the church's worship is communion, where it's, you say words and you're remembering something, but it's about a meal. It's about drinking some wine and eating some bread that becomes Jesus' body.
Yeah.
How does that work? I've got no idea how it works, but it takes you, but it takes you outside of the head. It's actually, look, you are, you don't just have a body, you are a body, and your body's important. And it's connecting people in a way that's not just, okay, well, 2 + 2 = 4, and you need to do this thing for me, and that kind of thing. It's about a deeper connection that can't be put into words.
Yeah, that you feel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You experience the body,
You feel it. There's a meditation that I use, and it's, in one part of the meditation, you have to repeat these two phrases, and the two phrases are, I am not the body, and I am not even the mind. I'm not the body, I'm not even the mind. And you just have to keep repeating it over and over again. And I think the idea is that it takes yourself away from all of this and kind of removes yourself. And I think we then begin to see this as a shell that allows us to communicate and talk and touch and feel and all the rest of it. But it's much deeper than that, because we are not the mind and we are not even the body. It's just, it's this is, because this will go. At some point, as we pass, this will just fall to the ground empty. Mm. Where the rest of it goes then is up for debate. Mm. But it's just a shell. It's just a shell that we inhabit whilst we're on Earth.
Mm.
So I think that's where the meditation comes from.
Mm.
But quite an interesting phrase.
Yeah.
For you, how do you think the church can help with our society's problems with mental health at the minute?
Yeah.
Given that it's so big.
Yeah.
And people refer to it as an epidemic, and there are many different reasons for that, but how have you seen it help people?
Yeah. So I think one of the very practical ways is that we offer a community of support to people. And there's so much, you know, we know how isolation really makes things difficult for people, particularly with regards to mental health, but actually physical health as well. So the church is a community that just,
yeah,
we're kind to each other, and we offer to support and friendship, and particularly as people get older, people are part of the church, and there are many, many people that give up hours and hours of their time just to do things like run the coffee bar and that kind of thing, which helps. It just brings people together. We're doing a well-being cafe on a Monday between 1 and 3, and that's open to anyone to come and have a cup of tea or coffee and a bit of cake, and just to chat and just be present. And people are really, really welcome to come along to that. I think when I was growing up, particularly as well, there was a thing. You know, with mental health and with guys, there can be this stigma around guys opening up and showing their emotions.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I that wasn't the world I grew up in. For me, it was really normal with my Christian guy friends, to talk about how we were doing.
Yeah.
And that was modelled in church. And there were strong Christian leaders who I looked up to as a teenager who said about what was going on in their internal worlds and what was going on in their hearts, and were vulnerable. And vulnerability was a key thing. So I think I've experienced that thing of actually vulnerability as a man is a good thing and a positive thing. And we, again, that's what we would offer as part of our culture in our church. And the ultimate thing is, I think a person's relationship with God is their fundamental relationship, and I think if you, well, there's a prayer that goes, it give me your love and your, take everything else from me, but give me your love and your grace, and with these I'll be satisfied, and I'll desire nothing more. And I've never been in that position where all I have is God, but I've been through some difficult times in my life, and for me, my relationship with God has been just that the anchor or the fundamental thing. and so now people have all kinds of different journeys and different kinds of stories, but I want to say that actually the more we pay attention to our relationship with God, actually that's the way to become more fully human and to become more alive. And I think that's at the deepest point what it's not even what we have to offer, it's more like God has the church to offer the world. That's in order to help people connect with him.
Do you think the connection with the church or the relationship with God has to start with relationship with self, or can it start the other way around?
So the question's about, like, where do you start in connecting with God?
Mm.
I think,
as I ask the question, I have no idea what the answer is.
Yeah, no. Well, for me, I think the thing about, there's all kinds of helpful things that we can do to help our own internal world. My conviction is that when I talk to God, I'm talking to someone who is outside of myself and is bigger than myself.
Yep.
And actually, who created everything.
Yep.
And who loves me.
Yep.
That's amazing. That's like, if I could really get my head around that, I think my head would explode or something. Yeah. So actually, for me, now sometimes when I'm praying, I'm a bit like, maybe this is just, you know, positive self-talk or something. But actually, I really do believe that God created everything. And one day God's going to make everything right in the world.
Yeah.
But actually, he's going to come and make everything. If God had the power to create everything, God's got the power to make everything right. And so all the things that I find difficult in the world, one day God will make them right. I don't know how, but God will. And so I think you can have an extra layer of hope or an extra layer of expectation if that's your conviction about the world, that the world started from a good place, was created in love, and is going to end up in a good place where all things are brought together by God's love. Actually, that's like really good news for the whole of the world and the whole of everything.
It's an amazing belief that I'm sure that a lot of people would really like to hold on to.
Yeah.
Because if we can believe that, then it gives us hope. Yeah. Gives us hope to move on. I feel like I need to tell you where I sit on. I think we know where David sits on his beliefs.
Yeah.
So my beliefs are, I always say that I'm not religious in the slightest, even though me and David have just had a conversation about the fact that I wear crosses. I've still no idea where that comes from. But I am very spiritual. I consider myself to be a really spiritual person. I believe in something larger than me. I believe in showing gratitude. There are times in my life that I look up and say, please, I just need you to get me through this. Please, just give me an extra hand right now because I really need you. So there's a lot of spirituality in my life. It goes a lot deeper than that, and there's a lot of beliefs around it. But not necessarily what I call religion. I don't call somebody, I wouldn't refer to God. I wouldn't refer to Buddha either, actually. I just refer to it as a larger thing than me, a larger energy that, I don't know, that takes care of us. But there are beliefs there. Mm. I'm not completely atheist and going, no, I don't believe in anything. There are definitely beliefs there because they give me hope.
Yeah.
We kind of interchange there because it gives me hope to believe that there is something larger there. And having that hope and being able to practice gratitude makes me feel nice.
Yeah.
And I think, interestingly, with the mind, taking it back to mental health, it's, I read somewhere that the mind can't think negatively and positively at the same time. It just can't. It's impossible. It's either one or the other. So if I'm practicing gratitude, it's very hard for me to then see the negative stuff around because I can't.
Mm.
So and when we think about mental health and connecting it all back to that, for me, that's the basis of it.
Mm.
I can have a flat tire and go, oh, well, you know, I can have a flat tire and have a really bad day with a flat tire, or I could have a flat tire and go, I've still got a car, and the tire will get changed, and nothing tragic is going to happen here, and I'm not going to die just because I had a flat tire. So it's being able to spin it as quickly as possible and go, it's fine. I'm still breathing, and I'm still communicating with people.
Mm. Well, I think that's totally true. I think it's good that when we look outside of ourselves, we experience hope and we have that gratitude. I think we're supposed to live like that. I think we feel that, and we're supposed to live in gratitude because that's the way we were created to be.
Yeah.
And the closer you get to that, and I think there is, I do think that scrutiny is important and that we ask difficult questions, and I respect people that are strong atheists who would criticize the church, and actually some of the strongest voices that have criticized the church have come from inside the church as well. So I think I'm glad that we live in a society where you can be open and you can have different opinions. I think that's essential.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you do have hope. If you really are a strong atheist and you're like, well, all that exists in the world is what I can see with experience with my five senses, and there's literally nothing else. There is no God, there's nothing. It's just very, I don't know, it must be quite empty, I think. It's hard to know where hope and gratitude, yeah. where hope comes from and where gratitude goes. And we're not supposed to live like that, I don't think.
I was, when you said that then, I was thinking of the word cold came into my head, and it felt, for me, it just feels very cold,
yeah.
that we can't have that level of hope in our world. I think for me, with my journey with mental health, my mind was so active and so anxious and so, I used to worry about everything all of the time, but it was so chaotic in my head that all I wanted was peace. And now I do anything at all to find that peace. And a lot of it does come from expressing gratitude. A lot of it comes from the work that I do, because then I get to switch from thinking about me to thinking about other people. And we know it's a well-known fact that as we give to other people, we do find our own peace. I always think about self-care and oxygen. And whenever you look at lists of how do I practice self-care, on there is always give to others, show others, be there for others. It's always on there that's present.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes you happier. And
yeah.
Giving stuff away makes you happy. Yeah. I can relate to that anxiety thing in terms of, in terms of my mental health, my anxiety is one of the things that I would have a vulnerability in or a weakness in. And when I was at school, I was very anxious about war, about like a world war.
Yeah.
And I think now, looking back, I didn't recognise it at the time, but I think there were a couple of times where I had panic attacks about the prospect, either hearing about, learning about war in school or thinking about, which actually, in some ways, if you really look in the face of what something like World War II was, it's a logical response to have if you have any kind of imagination. But that anxiety thing. But one of the things that I love about my job is that part of my job, I'm required to pray as part of my job.
Yeah.
It really helps me. I really love praying. And there are so many different ways to pray. There are as many ways to pray as there are people, really.
Yeah.
And I just think and that's one of the things that that does help me and has helped me. Every day at 9 o'clock in the morning, we get together in church and we say we pray for half an hour. I've been trying to pray first thing in the morning when I wake up, and there's a prayer that I pray. And actually today, as we're recording this, it's St. Teresa's Day, St. Teresa of Avila.
Okay.
And there's something called St. Teresa's bookmark, which people might have heard of, because I'd heard of it anyway, although I didn't know that was the name. But this was after she died, they found this thing written in Latin. And the English translation, let me see if I can remember it. I try and pray this as one of the things that I say to the very, very first thing when I wake up. Let nothing disturb thee, nothing affright thee. All things are changing. No, all things are passing. God never changeth. Patient endurance attaineth to all things. In whom God possesseth, nothing is lacking. Alone God sufficeth. So that's like the poetic... Nice. Way of saying it, but you don't be let nothing disturb thee, nothing affright thee. Don't be afraid. All things are passing.
Yeah.
Well, that's a helpful thing. You know, this too shall pass. All things are
absolutely
passing. God never changes, and you know God's love never changes. God is always there. God is always present.
Yeah.
Patient endurance attaineth to all things. It's an old-fashioned way of saying, look, if you're patient, if you can just patiently keep going, one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
In the end, you'll get there.
Yeah. Baby steps.
Yeah. And the one who God possesses, you don't lack anything. You are enough. If you, if God possesses you and if you possess God, you have everything that you need. You might not feel it, but just remind yourself that you do have everything that you need. And what's the last line? And alone God sufficeth. So actually, in God is everything that you need.
Yeah.
You can go to him and, you know, whatever it is you like, you can ask him for it and you can get it. It's that thing you were talking about before about like, look, hey, I really need your help. I'm reaching out and need a hand.
Yeah, and I would say that as somebody that doesn't consider himself to be religious, yet I would still in those moments go, I could really do with your help right now.
Yeah.
I have no idea who I'm talking to, but I'm reaching out to the universe and saying, can I just get a little bit more at the minute, please?
Yeah.
I'll give it you back at some other point,
yeah.
but can I get it right now?
Yeah.
And it's, I guess for me, that's like a, it's like a belief.
Yeah.
It's like a belief. And we were talking earlier about prayer, and you were expressing how much you love prayer, and I was talking about gratitude, and if I give gratitude for 5 or 10 things in my world, am I praying? Is that some sort of prayer? And a lot of people would say it is. And I would say, well, if that's a prayer, then I'm praying. Mm. That's cool. Call it whatever you want. Mm. I know it works for me. Mm. And I know it brings some peace into my world.
Mm. And who are you giving gratitude to?
The universe.
Yeah.
So I would refer to the universe where you would refer to God.
Yeah.
So for me, it would be the universe. Yeah. Or I've heard people refer to that as the one song. The one song being us as a race,
yeah,
as a human race, just all together.
Yeah,
it feels like sometimes when we talk about stuff like this, that we at points we would have to be recording for 5 hours to start unpicking this one.
Yeah.
At points, we just started to get it so wrong, and we got caught up in this world that is just crazy, crazy busy, mm, crazy busy. Again, in that meditation that I do, there's part of it where they say, always tilt your head upwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember why they say tilt your head upwards. It's something to do with flow, or if you look upwards, it's harder to... I can't remember what it was, but there's a reason.
Yeah.
And I passed a bus stop yesterday morning, and there was a young man stood at the bus stop on his phone, mm, with his head tilted downwards. Okay. Towards his phone. And I was, yeah, like, look at that posture, mm, and then look at what he's actually doing. The whole thing is essentially damaging to him, because not only is his head not upwards, but he's also looking downwards into somebody else's world, probably,
yeah,
or not at the world around him,
yeah,
because he was just stood waiting for a bus. Yeah, he was looking into this little black magic box, his telephone. And I do think sometimes when we look at stuff like that we've made some terrible, terrible, unhealthy decisions, mm, looking back.
Well, it can get so addictive. For me, it's the BBC News. I said that one time in church, I said I was giving up BBC News for Lent, and everyone laughed at me. But it's true. I don't know why, but I'm just like, something about me wants to check it every day. But
why?
I don't. The stories are all bad. It's all bad news. It's probably the little bit of me that wants to get a buzz of anxiety that just feeds on it.
Oh, do you miss it?
Well, it's... I've not gone cold turkey, but I do. But no, I do think.
No, I meant the anxiety.
What's that? Why do you miss it? Oh, right.
Do you miss it? And that's why you invite
it. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Invite it. You know, sometimes we can get so used to something.
Yeah.
We can get so, yeah, used to it. Then when it goes, we literally miss it.
Yeah.
So maybe you hit the nail on the head then. It may be by reading the news. You know why I don't read the news? I don't read the news, watch the news, or engage in any kind, yeah, of news. Because of that, because I don't want to know.
No.
I'm absolutely well assured that if this world is going to end,
yeah,
or there's a meteor heading for Newark,
yeah,
somebody will tell
You'll
me.
Find out.
Somebody will tell me, yeah, before it lands. And if they don't, then I didn't need to know.
Well, here's the thing. If you look back, if you're someone that does, like, I've asked myself this question before. If you actually do read the news, how many times in your life have you actually changed your behaviour because of something,
yeah,
something you read on the national news?
Yeah.
But how many, like, it's really, when swine flu was happening, did I not go and see anyone? No, I don't think. It's like it really, I find it really difficult to think of even a single time when I've done something different based on it. And you realise that the news, and actually quite a bit of social media, is a... It's an entertainment.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah.
But what it gives you very often is the news is always bad. So, or nearly always bad. So it gives you a certain sense of anxiety. A lot of news is predicated on outrage and anger, because, yeah, those emotions are quite stirring, and they'll stir you to.
Yeah.
And they're now, I think actually we're quite, I'm not saying that the news is always bad, because I think it's an important part of democracy, but, particularly with kind of American news, it's an industry where they're trying to make money based on selling advertising and all that kind of thing. So it's not always healthy. And I think,
no,
sometimes you do just, and that's been one of the changes actually that I've tried recently to, it used to be I'd check BBC News first thing that I wake up, but now I try and pray as the first thing I do.
I like
and
that.
And it really helps. Yeah. It does really help.
Just in terms of setting the day off on a, in a nice place. Yeah. There's a lot of, what do they call them, influencers out there that will say, No, wake up at 4 or 5 o'clock. The first thing you do is meditate. The second thing you do is set your intentions for the day. The third thing you do is you go and do some exercise, and you, it goes on from there. But it's all about setting the day off on a really positive intention, and not in somebody else's perception of what is happening in the world. And that's the part that really bothers me. When I read the news, I go, this is somebody else's perception right here. This is somebody else's thoughts on what's happening. I was sat with a friend the other day, and he won't mind me saying this. And there was five of us sat there, and he was on his phone. I said, what are you doing on your phone? So I'm just reading the news about Brexit. And I went, why? And he went, well, you know, I'm really worried about it. And I went, why? He says, well, because... And I went, why?
Yeah.
Why? Why? What What can you do now? Leave it. Leave it alone. And, you know, you're sat with friends here, and we can have a laugh. And I said, and you're worried about something that may or may not happen on the 31st of October. Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Because whatever happens, I says, and you don't work in Europe. You don't live in Europe. Well, you kind of do live in Europe. I says, but you have a secure job here in the UK. Mm. And you were born in the UK. Just leave it. You will be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I didn't want to unpick it any further than that, he has, a little bit like you, he has this desire, this unconscious desire to go in and feel that buzz and start worrying about it. Like, leave it alone.
Yeah, let go. Yeah.
So have another drink. Leave it alone.
And another thing, talk about leaving it alone, Jack, another thing I try and do is at the end of the day, just be able to let go of all the things.
Yes.
In the day. And I bought a little visual aid for the radio. It's always good. It's always good on the radio.
Unzipping pocket.
To bring a visual aid. But this is, look, can you hear these? This is, I guess it's a bit like a rosary.
Yeah.
It's been chewed by my dog, actually. Look, Jesus is a bit chewed there.
Aww.
Probably not as bad as being crucified, actually, but there you go.
And what do you use that for?
So at the end of the day, there's like a little, you can use these in different ways, but I find it so helpful to pray with a set of beads. And there's a different prayer for the different beads. So it goes, there's three red beads, and I go, as I pray through them, I go, Lord, have mercy, Christ, have mercy, Lord, have mercy, which is an ancient prayer.
Yeah.
And then there's a big brown bead, and I'll pray the Lord's Prayer. And then there's three red beads, so I'll do the Lord, have mercy again. I go around, there's a couple of those. And then at the cross, I'll pray, Lord Jesus, have mercy. No, Jesus Christ, I worship you. By your holy cross, you have overcome the world.
Yeah.
And I'll be saying these prayers, and in my head, I'll be running through all the things in the day, all the things that have made me feel really excited, all the things that I'm worrying about, all the things that I'm holding on to.
Mm.
And the words that I'm saying are connecting me with God, but in my mind, I'm just allowing myself to let go and let go of all the things that otherwise I'd take with me into sleep, and just be able to be at peace again, that thing of, nothing. It's really good to remind myself that actually, whatever I'm worrying about, you can't do anything about it.
No.
Just right before you go to bed.
No.
You know, you got to have a big conversation with someone tomorrow. You can't do anything about it now.
No.
Someone was upset with something you did. You can't do anything about it.
No.
Just to be able to let it go. And that's the helpful thing. By your holy cross, you've overcome the world. And that's an interesting thing about your the crosses. You've got that actually the cross is this huge symbol of hope that in the darkest hour of all humanity, actually God brought light out of it, and God brought new life out of it, and it became the best thing that ever happened in human history. And by your holy cross, you've overcome the world. So even in the midst of all this suffering, Jesus overcame all the difficulties in this world. So again, that's just to be like, hey, it is okay. The world is okay. Or maybe the world isn't okay, but God's going to make the world okay.
Yeah.
Nothing's beyond his ability to
message redeem. Of hope.
Yeah, exactly.
Do rosary beads work in a very similar fashion with, in terms of the beads having meaning something?
Yes, they do, but I can't remember what. I think it's to do with a prayer to Mary, so I'm an Anglican, and we don't pray to Mary and the saints in the same way. At the Reformation, the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church split on that, and one of the things the Protestant Church stopped doing was praying to Mary, and so that prayer, Hail Mary, full of grace, and I don't know the rest of it by heart, Don't tell anyone, but sometimes I've had a little pray to Mary. It's quite, and I found it really beneficial. But don't, you know, I'm not supposed
don't
to
as a vicar.
But it is that. But I think there's something about as well. Our conception of God can be very masculine.
Yeah.
You know, when people say God, quite often, you know, The Simpsons. It's just like this guy with a big beard.
Yeah.
White guy with a big beard. But actually, to recognise the maternal aspects of God's love. As well, that in the Bible, there's a number of passages that show that God has this motherly care. And I think that's probably one of the things that where the Catholic Church really has a strong emphasis on Mary and connecting with Mary, it's got a good, maybe you might want to say God loves like a woman, that Mary was. Now, that might be sexist for me to say that men and women love in different ways, but the fact that that Mary was chosen to love God, to carry God, to be the God-bearer,
yeah.
And she loved God in Jesus Christ, and that's important. And that not just a kind of paternal... So I'm saying things that I don't want to get into kind of too much gender stereotyping, but I think it's fair to say that people might tend to see God as a paternal authoritarian figure, but to recognize that within God is also the love that is welcoming and embracing and soft and comforting and uplifting.
Yeah.
Whether you'd see those things as masculine or feminine or neither or whatever, it's important to recognize that God isn't some chap with a beard in the sky who's going to tell you off.
Just love.
Yeah.
And going back to the heart and the heart math, where do we feel love? We feel it in the heart.
Yeah.
If we feel it there.
Yeah.
If we feel it there.
Yeah.
We are well over time. Is there any last message that you would like to give to the listeners? For this podcast, I'm hoping that you'll come back and do more, but for this one.
There's a really good bit in one of the stories of Jesus' life. It starts with this poem, and it's talking about Jesus, and it says, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it."
Hmm.
Or the darkness could not comprehend it. But that idea of Jesus is the light that shines in the darkness, and even when we feel like we might feel like the darkness has won, but it's not true. The deepest reality of the universe is that the light that shines in Jesus Christ in the universe cannot be overcome by darkness. I'd encourage people that I think that's fundamentally true about the universe. No matter how difficult they feel, whatever place they feel, don't give up hope. All isn't lost.
Absolutely.
The light shines in the darkness and the darkness can't overcome it.
It reminds me of a journey I did many, many years ago with somebody, and I remember working with them and saying, I'm very visual, so when I work with somebody, I start to kind of feel and almost imagine their mind and how it looks.
Yeah.
And I said, when I think about your mind, all I can see is darkness. And he says, well, that's how it feels. And I went, but there is light there. And he went, I can't see any light. I says, there is light. I says, what I want to do is I want to start working on a series of spotlights that will start lighting up your mind so you can see more clearly. And actually, those lights came from gratitude. And I said to him, tell me what you have in your world. And actually, back then, this is in my earlier days of being a therapist, I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just kind of expressing what I was seeing visually. But actually, I was asking him to give me gratitude. And I went, your slithers of gratitude are like light. And the more you can see them and connect to them, the lighter your brain and your mind will become, and the more light you'll have in there. So it fits in with that perfectly. Mm. And eventually we did, and eventually he started to see it. Amazing. The very fact that he woke up breathing is something that we take for granted every day. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
It's a gift.
Yeah.
If you wake up breathing, it's a gift from whoever you want to believe in, but it's a gift that you've been given another day to carry on.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
We've already arranged for you to come back and do a Christmas special with us. Christmas being a very hard time for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for being here today.
No, my pleasure. My absolute pleasure.
Remember that these podcasts are for you. Remember that if we're not covering subjects that, areas of mental health that you want us to dig into more, then please let us know. If you feel this podcast will benefit somebody else, then please pass it on. If you've got any questions, please ask away. And as always, remember to be very, very kind to yourself, because you are worth it. Take care. Bye-bye.